Chapter 4. The Birth of Al-Qaeda. The founding of Al-Qaeda marked an irrevocable split between bin Laden and his former mentor Abdullah Azzam. This split would have fateful consequences. Azzam advocated a concept of jihad that was essentially a traditional fundamentalist interpretation of the nature of jihad, the reclamation of once Muslim lands from non-Muslim rule in places such as Palestine, what was then the Soviet Union, and even southern Spain, which had been under Muslim rule 5 centuries earlier. The predominantly Egyptian militants who surrounded bin Laden at the end of the 80s advocated something more radical, the violent overthrow of governments across the Muslim world they deemed apostate, a concept of jihad that Azzam and many of his followers rejected as they wanted no part in conflicts between Muslims. The split between Azzam and the ultra-jihadists around bin Laden may have even cost Azzam his life. He was assassinated by unknown assailants in November 1989, a year after Al-Qaeda had been secretly founded. Osama bin Laden. Abu Ubaidah al-Banshiri established the training camps for our mujahideen against Russia's terrorism during the 1980s. We used to call the training camp Al-Qaeda, and the name stayed. What follows is a passage from Jihad magazine, which seems to be the first discussion of Al-Qaeda, the base. In this passage, Abdullah Azzam was writing about a base that would serve as the foundation of an Islamist vanguard. He was not using the word Al-Qaeda in the military sense of a base. Al-Qaeda al-Subah, the solid base, from Jihad magazine, issue 41, April 1988, by Abdullah Azzam. Every principle needs a vanguard to carry it forward and, while forcing its way into society, puts up with heavy tasks and enormous sacrifices. There is no ideology, neither earthly nor heavenly, that does not require such a vanguard, that gives everything it possesses in order to achieve victory for this ideology. It carries the flag all along the sheer, endless, and difficult path until it reaches its destination. This vanguard constitutes the solid base, Al-Qaeda al-Subah, for the expected society. 4 months after Azzam had written about the need for a solid base for the creation of the perfect Islamic society, bin Laden founded Al-Qaeda, an explicitly military organization that was created to be quite different in purpose from Abdullah Azzam's services office, which had increasingly taken a role in non-military activities such as schooling. In March 2002, Bosnian authorities seized documents in the Sarajevo offices of Benevolence International Foundation, a Muslim charity long supportive of jihads around the world. They discovered a substantial number of electronic files and documents stored on a computer. One of the computer files was entitled Tariq Osama, Osama's History, a collection of bin Laden's correspondence, minutes of meetings, and other documents, which details his activities during the Afghanistan jihad and the formation of Al-Qaeda in 1988. Some of these documents would be entered into evidence in the trial of Inam Arnaout, an employee of Benevolence International living in Chicago, who pled guilty to charges of fraud in February 2003. In some circles, it has become fashionable to suggest that bin Laden has not been especially significant to the global jihadist movement, or that Al-Qaeda has always, in reality, been only a loose-knit collection of like-minded Islamist militant groups, or even that Al-Qaeda is an organization that was fabricated by U.S. law enforcement. The fullest exposition of this point of view was made in 2004 in the 3-hour BBC documentary The Power of Nightmares, directed by Adam Curtis, which argued that beyond his small group, bin Laden had no formal organization until the Americans invented one for him. Curtis claims that Al-Qaeda was first invented in 2001 when U.S. prosecutors put 4 men involved in the 1998 plot to blow up 2 U.S. embassies in East Africa on trial in New York. During the trial, they drew heavily on the testimony of former bin Laden aide Jamal al-Fadl, who, Curtis explains, spun a story about the Saudi militant that would make it easier for U.S. prosecutors to target bin Laden using conspiracy laws that had previously put mafia bosses behind bars. Curtis says, "The picture al-Fadl drew for the Americans of bin Laden was of an all-powerful figure at the head of a large terrorist network that had an organized network of control." He also said that bin Laden had given this network a name, Al-Qaeda. But there was no organization. These were militants who mostly planned their own operations and looked to bin Laden for funding and assistance. He was not their commander. There is also no evidence that bin Laden used the term Al-Qaeda to refer to the name of a group until after 11th September, when he realized that this was the term the Americans had given it. All of these assertions are nonsense. There is overwhelming evidence that Al-Qaeda was founded in 1988 by bin Laden and a small group of like-minded militants, and that the group would eventually mushroom into the secretive, disciplined, global organization dominated by bin Laden that implemented the 9/11 attacks. That evidence can be found in the documents in this chapter, which were recovered in Bosnia in 2002, and can also be found in the interviews throughout this book. The following are translated copies of handwritten correspondence between bin Laden, alias Abu al-Kaka, and Mohammed Luay Bayazid, a Syrian also known as Abu Rida al-Suri. Some of the letters bear bin Laden's signature at the bottom of the originals. Bayazid, a founding member of al-Qaeda, had responsibility for procuring weapons and other equipment. Tariq Osama excerpt. "In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brother Abu al-Rida, may God protect him. God's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you. I hope that you and all of the brothers are well and enjoying the approval of God the Almighty. It disappoints me that your news reached us very late, knowing that travelers come to us frequently. I also hope that after Abu Anis reaches you, that you move toward us immediately in anticipation of the attack on the Russians as the time has come. One of the brothers, whose name is Abu Abdel Latif, is with Abu al-Nasr, and if he wants to come tonight, take care of him so that he comes to us tomorrow, for his plane departs on Thursday from Karachi to Yemen. I request that you ask the Yemeni embassy if a Saudi needs a visa to enter Yemen. If so, I hope you work on a visa for me so I can go with him. I ask that you communicate my greetings to Abu al-Hassan al-Madani, and I hope that he will visit us if he has returned from Hijaz, a Saudi province. And I also hope that you bring 500,000 rupees at a minimum, about 10,000 U.S. dollars. And God's peace, mercy, and blessings be upon you. Do not forget us in your prayers. Your brother, Osama bin Laden." Signature. 9/8/07. 1407 Hijriya, 1987. The following letter refers to Abu Ubaida al-Banshiri, a founding member of al-Qaeda, who became its first military commander. Bin Laden instructs Abu Rida to pay Abu Ubaida and Abu Hafs al-Masri, two Egyptians who would play a crucial leadership role in al-Qaeda, a monthly salary, and to treat them as if they were a part of the Mektab al-Khidmat, the services office. Tariq Osama excerpt. "In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful, brother Abu al-Rida, peace be upon you. Please arrange the statuses of brother Abu Ubaida al-Banshiri and brother Abu Hafs al-Masri as married and on a monthly basis, and peace and God's mercy be upon you. Both are to be treated like Maktab al-Khidmat, the services office. Osama bin Laden." 9,000 riyals monthly, around $200 a month. Starting with month 1, 1987. 4,500 to each of them. This next document, dating probably from 1988, illustrates how from its earliest days, al-Qaeda had an interest in recruiting Americans. Wade al-Hajj, a Lebanese-American, would become bin Laden's personal secretary when al-Qaeda was based in Sudan in the mid-90s. El-Hajj was born in Lebanon in 1960, and in 1978 he settled in Lafayette, Louisiana, where he studied urban planning at the University of Louisiana. He is serving a life sentence on over 300 counts of involvement in the 1998 attacks on the two U.S. embassies in Africa. Tariq al-Musaddat, 86, 87, 88. Name, Wade al-Hajj. Alias, Abdul Sabur. Age, 28 years old. Address, Tucson, Arizona, America. Training, Salman al-Farsi, Afghani France, 5 years, trained on most types of weapons, mines, explosives, and booby traps. Time spent previously in jihad, a total of 3 years. Time I will spend now, 3 weeks, starting from 15th of Ramadan. Work skilled at carrying out orders. Time spent previously in Jaji, 2.5 months.
This ends Disc 3. The Osama bin Laden I Know, Disc 4.
What follows are excerpts of a key document, the minutes, of the first meeting about the establishment of al-Qaeda on August 11, 1988. This document outlines the discussion between bin Laden, referred to as the Sheikh, and Abu Rida, or Mohammed Luay Bayazid, to discuss the formation of a new military group, which would include al-Qaeda, the base. Abu Rida refers to a disagreement with Abdullah Azam, with whom bin Laden had founded the Mektab al-Khidmat services office. Tariq Osama, excerpt, 8/11/1988. Between Abu al-Rida and the Sheikh, bin Laden, a discussion regarding the establishment of the new military group. General camp, special camp, Qaeda base. Abu al-Rida, A. Did you take the opinion of Sheikh Abdullah Azam, knowing that the Sheikh's military gang has ended? This future project is in the interest of the Egyptian brothers, an apparent reference to Ayman al-Zawahiri's jihad group. The Sheikh, bin Laden. I am one person. We have not started an organization or an Islamic group. It was a period of 1.5 years. It was a period of education, building energy, and testing the brothers who came. Starting all these matters in the darkest of circumstances, and the period is very short, we took very huge gains from the people in Saudi Arabia. We were able to give political power to the Mujahideen, gathering donations in very large amounts. As for our Egyptian brothers, their standing with us in the darkest of circumstances cannot be ignored. Another apparent reference to Ayman al-Zawahiri's jihad group. Abu al-Rida. We did not reach the primary goals and we did not follow the plan. We did not expect the events that happened. Our work moves according to capability. We lost a lot of time. In conclusion, Abu al-Rida, A. Establishing a staged plan, B. Establishing a time frame for this stage. Initial estimate, within 6 months of al-Qaeda, the base, 314 brothers will be trained and ready. A week later, there was a more formal discussion of the formation of al-Qaeda. What follows are some of the minutes of a 3-day meeting starting August 18, 1988, in bin Laden's house. The participants, including bin Laden, Abu Ubaidah, al-Qaeda's military commander, and Abu Hajir, al-Qaeda's religious advisor, established an advisory council and a list of requirements and an oath of allegiance for new members in al-Qaeda. Tariq Osama. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. The brothers mentioned attended the Sheikh bin Laden's house. Most of the discussion was about choosing an advisory council. There is also a summary of what happened with the Mektab al-Khidmat, the services office. The meeting was held for 2 days in a row, and the advisory council met on Friday with the following brothers. 1. Sheikh Osama bin Laden. 2. Abu Ubaidah al-Banshiri, al-Qaeda's military commander. 3. Abu Burhan. 4. Sheikh Tamim. 5. Abu Hajir. 6. Abu Anas. 7. Abu al-Hasan al-Madani. 8. Abu al-Hasan al-Maki. 9. Abu Ibrahim. The meeting was summarized in 2 points by the Sheikh bin Laden. The complaints, mismanagement and bad treatment in Mektab al-Kadmat, the services office. The sheikh decided to engage the council in making a change. The meeting stayed from sunset until 2 at night. And on Saturday morning, 8/20/1988, the aforementioned brothers came and started the meeting, and the military work was suggested to be divided in two parts according to duration. Limited duration. They will go to Sada camp, a camp on the Afghan-Pakistan border, then get trained and distributed on Afghan fronts under supervision of the military council. Open-ended duration. They enter a testing camp, and the best brothers of them are chosen to enter Al-Qaeda al-Askariya, the military base. Al-Qaeda is basically an organized Islamic faction. Its goal will be to lift the word of God to make his religion victorious. Requirements to enter Al-Qaeda. Members of open duration, an apparent reference to an open-ended commitment. Listening and obedient. Good manners, referred from a trusted side. Obeying statutes and instructions of Al-Qaeda. The pledge to join Al-Qaeda. The pledge of God and his covenant is upon me, to listen and obey the superiors who are doing this work in energy, early rising, difficulty, and easiness, and for his superiority upon us, so that the word of God will be the highest and his religion victorious. The meeting ended on the evening of Saturday, 8/20/19. Work of Al-Qaeda commenced on 9/10/1988, with a group of 15 brothers, including 9 administrative brothers. Almost exactly 13 years after Al-Qaeda was first launched on September 10, 1988, the organization carried out the 9/11 attacks. Jamal Khalifa, bin Laden's brother-in-law, explains his theory why bin Laden, by all accounts, a humble, retiring, young man, would have agreed to become the leader of the Al-Qaeda organization. Especially when you come to a religious issue. Osama is very sensitive and he really likes to implement Islam. And he's very much, at the same time, afraid that if he does not, God will punish him. He saw Abu Ubaidah and Abu Hafs in the battle. They were very brave and they have religious knowledge. Abu Ubaidah is memorizing all the Quran, and when you see him, most of the time he is fasting. And in the night, he is praying the night prayer, which is very difficult. He is really a very good religious Muslim. Abu Ubaidah and Abu Hafs came and they said, "Look, Osama, we are thousands of persons and we are a party. We have this background, we have this profile, and we saw that you are the leader which we can trust. In Islam, we call it bayah. We appointed you as our leader and we will follow you." This is my theory. There is no other way to convince Osama to be a leader. He doesn't like being a leader because he's a humble person. He's not a person who wants to show off at all. Jamal Ismail, the Palestinian who edited Jihad magazine for the services office. Al-Qaeda is different than other organizations. Their target is to spread the soul and the idea of jihad among Muslims, to spread the understanding of the importance of jihad, their idea of jihad, which means fighting infidels, and to establish a truly Islamic government all over the world. They were recruiting people from different countries, from Saudi, Yemen, Sudan, Iraq, Egypt, Palestine, Jordan, elsewhere, but they were very, very, very careful about choosing or recruiting anyone. Abu Musab al-Suri, who first met bin Laden in 1988, offers his explanation of the founding of Al-Qaeda in his History of Jihadist Movements, the International Islamic Resistance Call. Islam needed Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda came from the first example of Abu Bakr, one of the companions of the Prophet, when he joined the Prophet Muhammad in war in the period following 622 AD. And this army was able to win against the greatest powers of the world, Rome and Persia. This is the inspiration for Al-Qaeda. In its early days, Al-Qaeda may have been largely financed and nominally led by bin Laden, but both its ideological outlook and its key personnel derived from Egypt's Jihad group, Hassan Abd Rabah al-Surehi, an early Saudi recruit to the Afghan Jihad, relates his witnessing the birth of al-Qaeda. The establishment of al-Qaeda was discussed in the home of Osama bin Laden in Peshawar following the departure of the Russians from Afghanistan at the end of the Jihad. I was one of those who witnessed the birth of al-Qaeda. The idea of al-Qaeda is an Egyptian one by the Islamic Jihad group led by Abu Ubaidah al-Banshiri and Abu Hafs al-Masri. They are the ones, especially al-Banshiri, who proposed the idea to Osama bin Laden after the end of Jihad. Al-Banshiri was with us in the al-Masada camp in 1987 to repulse a sweeping Russian assault when he was hit in the leg. He is a former officer in the Egyptian army. Bin Laden's finances were not a secret to anyone, and I think the Egyptians wanted to exploit this angle. After the end of the Jihad, the Egyptians began to gather and meet in bin Laden's residence in Peshawar. They began to invite journalists and the representatives of relief agencies to bin Laden's residence in order to put him in the spotlight because they began to operate under his umbrella. Bin Laden liked the idea of the al-Qaeda, and he also liked the media spotlight. One day I went to Osama's home and saw al-Banshiri, Abu Hafs, some others, and a group of journalists. After the journalists left, only al-Banshiri, Abu Hafs al-Masri, and Osama were left in the gathering. Al-Banshiri was talking. Al-Banshiri was a sedate and soft-spoken man. He also had a strong personality. Al-Banshiri addressed his words to me. "You are aware of Brother Osama bin Laden's generosity. He has spent a lot of money to buy arms for the young mujahideen, as well as in training them and paying for their travel tickets. Now that the jihad has ended, we should not waste this. We should invest in these young men and we should mobilize them under his umbrella. We should form an Islamic army for jihad that will be called al-Qaeda. This army will be one of the fruits of what bin Laden has spent on the Afghan jihad. We should train these young men and equip them to be ready to uphold Islam and defend Muslims in any part of the world. The members of this army should be organized and highly trained." As al-Banshiri was addressing his words to me, I looked at Osama bin Laden to see his reaction. I said, "Let me be frank and clear with you. I joined the jihad after one of our ulema issued a fatwa. I also came for a specific purpose. I am not inclined to support what you are saying about the formation of an organization and an Islamic army." As I was talking, I noticed that Osama bin Laden raised his head, smiled, and turned to me. He stood up, looked at me, and asked that we talk in private in a place close by. He emphasized to me that they very much wanted me to join them because they are looking for someone with traits that can influence the young men. He said that young men usually gather around someone they love. Osama had noticed these traits when I was working under his command in the al-Masada camp, in which I spent about 4 months. He asked me to respond to this wish, and he tried to persuade me. However, I declined and told him, "Brother Osama, you will be rewarded by God Almighty for what you have spent for the sake of jihad, and not by anyone else, as Brother Abu Ubaidah al-Banshiri is saying. Do not expect to reap the fruit of what you spent here by forming such an army to continue to train the young men on the use of arms. These young men came to wage jihad in Afghanistan following legal fatwas that gave them permission to wage jihad in the name of God." I told him, "I do not want to stand against you. However, I will give my opinion if anyone asks me, because I do not see a Muslim legitimacy for such an organization." After al-Qaeda was formed, they established arms training camps. The majority of the instructors were Egyptians who were paid their salaries by bin Laden. It seems that these instructors, who used to work in Azam's camps before he was assassinated, had past experience in the Egyptian army or security organs. During the training period, there were some Egyptians whose task was to screen the young men well. They looked for certain specific qualifications among these young men. The most important criteria were that the ones who are chosen should be young, zealous, obedient, and with a weak character that obeys instructions without question. This period of scrutiny went on for 1 to 2 weeks in closed and guarded locations, which were accessible only to the al-Qaeda groups. Sometimes only very few were selected and were asked whether they wanted to join. If these accepted to join, they were asked to leave and bid farewell to their families, and then to return for higher training in the camps on specialized military curricula, preparatory level, middle level, and final level. Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who covered the Afghan jihad. Al-Qaeda was founded almost the same time when I first heard it from Osama himself. Bin Laden saw that Afghan jihad would be over soon. The Soviets have withdrawn, and it's just a matter of time. He predicted that the Mujahideen would be victorious in weeks or months. So what we will do with those Arab Mujahideen? They will go back to their countries, but the flame of jihad should continue elsewhere. So he saw that there would be opportunities in places like Central Asia. It will be called Al-Qaeda. I was surprised, and I discussed it with him, and I said, but Arab regimes will not like that. Radicalism came to Afghanistan after 89, when the Afghan cause became a popular cause. When I went to Afghanistan, first in 1987, what Osama had in mind and Abdullah Azam had in mind is to use me somehow to tell about the opportunity waiting for the Arabs in Afghanistan so they could invite more Arabs. And Abdullah Azam, when he used to travel to America, he was inviting Arabs. But Abdullah Azam was kind of selective. He wanted people whom they would come under his guidance to work within his system. But Afghanistan became so popular, so everybody began to go there. Independent Muslims and radical Muslims, people who were a drug addict a couple of months ago, and then they're sober, and now they're like a newborn Christian. And I remember us making jokes about those people. Like I remember this Belgian Muslim who came to Afghanistan, and 6 months before, he was a bouncer at one of the bars there. So after 89, floodgates opened to Afghanistan of all kind of Arab adventurists, and that's when radicalism starts creeping in. They were different in opinion at that time. Abdullah Azam was selective. Osama was more in the mindset that this is a jihad and we must open it to everybody. And Abdullah Azam did not like that. This letter, discovered in the Tariq Osama file in the Sarajevo offices of Benevolence International Foundation in 2002, shows how already in the late 1980s, Bin Laden's name and largesse was becoming known not only in the Middle East, but around the Muslim world. This is an undated letter, probably from around 1989, from a jihadist group based in the Eastern African country of Eritrea, addressed to Bin Laden. Tariq Osama. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. To our Mujahid prince and reviver of the spirit of jihad in our Islamic world, brother in God, Mr. Abu Abdallah Osama bin Laden. We greet you with the greeting of Islam, peace and God's mercy and blessings be upon you. We come to you with the following requests, which we believe to be important at the present time. 1. Facilitating the travel of the youth to the field of jihad, so that they can benefit from the training possibilities by providing them with tickets and entry visas. 2. Dedicating 2 individuals on a temporary basis to follow up on transporting the youth and to facilitate their travel and movement. 3. Opening a Mektab al-Kadmat services office in northern Yemen and Sudan. 4. Providing a number of vehicles for transportation and movement inside Sudan and Eritrea. 5. Providing a number of the following equipment, a typewriter, a video recorder, and a photocopier. And peace and God's mercy and blessings be upon you. Presented by Mr. Mohammed Othman. Jamal Fadl, an early Al-Qaeda recruit. When the Russians decide to leave Afghanistan, Bin Laden, he decides to make his own group. Al-Qaeda, it's established to do jihad. You have to make bayat. Bayat means you swear an oath of allegiance to bin Laden. At that time, our general emir is Osama bin Laden. Under the emir, it's something called shura, consultative council. Under shura council, we have different committee. We have committee for military purpose. The emir of the military committee, his name, Abu Ubaida al-Banshiri. We got money and business committee. Under the money committee, we got office for immigration stuff. Like if you want to travel. We got another committee for media reporting and the newspaper. There was a daily and a weekly publication. On February 15, 1989, after occupying Afghanistan for a decade, the Soviets finally withdrew. All sides anticipated that the Afghan communist government in Kabul would collapse quickly after the withdrawal of the Soviets. The U.S. and Pakistani governments encouraged the Afghan Mujahideen factions to seize a major city inside Afghanistan. Jalalabad, a city near the border with Pakistan, was the most obvious candidate. Arabs under bin Laden's command were also eager to take part in the siege of Jalalabad, which began in March 1989. This battle illustrates bin Laden's military incompetence. It was a virtual bloodbath for his men. This did not quell their enthusiasm. Jihad magazine issues 57 and 58, July and August 1989, The Battle of Jalalabad. One of the first to come to the land of jihad in Afghanistan, Abu Qutaiba found his place in the Masada, the lion's den, and became the closest escort to Abu Abdallah, Osama bin Laden. And it was as if his passion was serving Abu Abdallah. He was Abu Abdallah's right hand, who loved him like the spring. The fire of the battle started to burn on the land of the heroes around Jalalabad, and the role of the Arab Ansar supporters became visible. And the battle started to intensify, and the hand of death was kidnapping souls. A tank rocket killed three brothers, including Abu Qutaiba. It slashed them in pieces. And Abu Abdallah bin Laden was talking, and suddenly when he came to talk about Abu Qutaiba, his throat became dry and his eyes became wet and he couldn't find his words anymore. He tried again to talk, and the dry throat and the wet eyes came back again. And the third time, he couldn't talk anymore and the whole audience stayed silent. The hot fights started in Jalalabad, and Abu Abdallah took charge of the closest front lines to the enemy, and he started attacking with every hero that God gave him. Their number increased in view of their desire of taking part in the deliverance of Jalalabad and the airport there under the command of Osama bin Laden. The Arab Mujahideen lost 80 and more than 100 were injured. Steve McCurry is an American photographer who visited Afghanistan throughout the 1980s. His National Geographic portrait of a 12-year-old Afghan girl with luminous green eyes is one of the iconic photographs of the past two decades. In the spring of 1989, he was on assignment for Time magazine in the Jalalabad area. We all ran into these Arab types, particularly Saudis, throughout that period, and I can think of four separate encounters in Kandahar, coast, around Jalalabad, where you were kind of wondering if they were just going to shoot you right there on the spot, and they were very nasty and kind of felt that they owned Afghanistan. My encounter with bin Laden? There was fairly heavy fighting going on around Jalalabad, particularly around the airport, about as heavy a fighting as I ever experienced in Afghanistan. The Mujahideen thought the seizure of Jalalabad was going to be a walkover, and they basically had a daytime attack, like in the middle of the morning on the airport in Jalalabad. We were getting bombed by mortars and artillery and small arms, really kind of frightening. It must have been about 10 in the morning. We were getting shelled not only from the guys in the airport, but also from other bases and artillery. It was a major battle with mortars and artillery. It was just amazing. The Arabs were clearly into this whole thing. They were clearly willing to be on the front lines, willing to sacrifice. There were these Arabs that were actually taking pretty heavy casualties. And one of these Arabs got hit, and they were dragging him feet first down a path, and he was probably dead. And I jumped out from behind a wall. We were probably 20 people, just sort of cowering there. And I went over to photograph this guy they were dragging down the path, and one Arab guy picked up a stone, and we were like eyeball to eyeball, and he was screaming at me. And he was going to bash my brains. And for whatever reason, he didn't. That night, or the next day, these Arabs were kind of grouped together in a house around this really tall guy with this white thing on his head, a white kind of cloth. And we had come up on them unexpectedly. As we approached, they came up and they wanted to know why this kafir infidel was in Afghanistan. And I had no business being there, and it was a jihad. A guy with a pistol stood up, basically If you don't shove off, there's nothing I'd like better to do than just to blow you away. It was one of Bin Laden's hangers-on. Bin Laden seemed totally indifferent, like we were stray dogs who had come into the perimeter and we were being shooed off. I first went to Afghanistan in 79, and I'd been in probably a dozen times up to that point and always felt very much at home. The Afghans are really friendly people, and I could basically just kind of walk around with one person, even unarmed. For the Arabs to come in and act as though this was their war, their country, and they were treating the Afghans like they were just these sort of uneducated, uncouth, illiterate sort of bumpkins who didn't really get it. These guys, they're really, really nasty, and very aggressive, and very condescending, and just hateful. And the Afghans, actually, it was their country being basically slowly destroyed. And they were often very good-humored. Jamal Ismail. A lot of Arabs was there, in Jalalabad, and they were supporting the idea to have control over any major city. Unfortunately, it was a disaster. Jihad Magazine, issues 57 and 58, July and August, 1989. Here is how the heroes of the Masada Lion's Den died and the land of Jalalabad swallowed one lion after another. And Abu Abdullah Osama bin Laden had pain every time he would say goodbye to one mujahid. And every time he would say goodbye, a new rocket would come and take another one. And it would leave him in pain and sorrow. And before the healing of his injury, a new arrow would hit his wound, reopening the injury that was healing. Abu Zaheb died. And Abu Abdullah bin Laden told me, "I never had pain for anyone before like I had for Abu Zaheb." And then followed him Khalid el-Kerdi, the Kurd. And Abu Abdullah said, "I never had sorrow before like for Khalid." Jihad Magazine, issue 53, 1989, April. Around the time of the siege of Jalalabad, Afghan leader Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, whose party had received at least $600 million in U.S. aid, was asked during a press conference by a Western journalist about his position on the Arab groups trying to spread Wahhabism. Hekmatyar answered, "It's none of your business, and we won't accept anybody to interfere in our internal affairs. We are against the Western organizations that spy on us and the Christian organizations that come here under a humanitarian pretext. We won't let them come to Afghanistan." British reporter Ed Girardet was covering the siege of Jalalabad. The incident with bin Laden was in February 89. About 15 kilometers outside Jalalabad, you had the communist government forces entrenched, and the Mujahideen and the Arabs were on a ridge. One of the Afghans took us to the front lines, and there were about 50, 60 Arabs in the trenches there, and then a tall man came out, and he spoke in English. I was trying to think where he went to school. It was sort of an American accent. Very tall. That's what struck me immediately. And he wants you to have respect for him. He was clearly the boss. When I asked him his name, he wouldn't give me his real name. Of all the people crowded around him, there wasn't a single Afghan among them. It was clear that he was the Arab man. And later on, I asked an Afghan, and he said, "Yeah, they have lots of money and cars and such." Bin Laden came out demanding what we're doing there, saying, "This is our jihad, not your jihad." Then I went into a thing about how we've been coming here for quite a number of years and we've never seen you guys. After that, we had a delightful conversation. I stopped going through the interpreter and we had a direct conversation in English. The best description I can give is that he sort of came across as being a rather spoiled brat, like he was sort of playing at jihad, kind of an "I'm here now, look at me" sort of thing. Of course, by then the conversation was getting more and more hostile, and many of his men came and many of the Mujahideen came over. At this point, my translator was translating everything into Pashto for the Afghans. They were all snickering. There was obviously no love lost between the two sides.